So I'm not so familiar with the protocol from Abu Dhabi. It's my first time. I called someone who had a little bit more experience. He told me that there are two main rules for the moderator. First of all, remain as invisible as possible. So as a question-answer session goes downhill when the moderator begins to think he's on the panel. So I'm just here to ask some questions. And secondly, make sure that everyone gets home on time. So I have two jobs, to stay out of it and to make sure that everything goes according to time. Doesn't sound like there's much to gain for the moderator. Then it sounds like if it goes wrong, it's my fault. If it goes well, I have nothing to do with it. So we'll see. We'll begin with the question. Most of the questions that I will pose will be very direct questions, which seems to include many of the questions that were sent in. And of course, we're using them just as a springboard for the Rosh Yeshiva to respond to. The Frum world has been taken by the recent Sefer published by Rabbi Lapiansky, guiding a Ben Torah for life to make the transition from yeshiva into the workplace. The Sefer, which Rabbi Bruni wrote a beautiful haskama for. So, with that backdrop, the Sefer that I personally can tell you, I got four of these far for Chanukah gifts. I don't know anyone else here. But it seems to be unanimous that I need to work in this area. And I work in a shul, so I don't know. They make it work on Shabbos, but other than that. So the Chodos of Avos writes, which Rabbi Lapiansky brings, that a person should use his unique God-given talents to understand what it is he should be doing to earn a livelihood. Says the Chodos of Avos, in this way, we find that different people whose inclinations and bodies are appropriate for certain businesses and crafts. If one finds himself an aptitude and he relishes a particular industry, his body is cut out for it and he has the endurance, he should pursue it and make it his vehicle for livelihood. In today's day and age, with many of the jobs that people in our community occupy, it is difficult to assume that this is my divinely ordained mandate. If a person has the means to participate in the world of philanthropy, that can often provide them with purpose and meaning. But many of us find ourselves sitting behind a desk for most of our days, involved in activities which seem to be void of any inherent meaning or divine purpose. Is there any way of reclaiming the philosophy of the Chovos HaLevavos and having it conform to today's society?
Can I try without a mic? What's not going to work? If the Olam hears me, I'd prefer without a mic, but if not, we'll use technology. I'm a door behind. First of all, I was very comforted by the fact that you see from Yitzhak Avinu that even if you mistake the identity of the person, the brachas are still chal. So when I heard Afina's words of introduction, they certainly were kolei about Rav Rudni, but it wasn't a ger to me. But the brach is achal no matter what, even if you use an ayin toiv too much and a little over about these things. Al Capone, getting back to this question. So, yes, if a person can find a career, and it's nogea in the early stage, obviously a person has different choices. Finding something that he feels he's oisik in a particular yeshiva sho'olam is good. But I think there's a broader yeshiva sho'olam that I grew up with, and I don't hear it today. My father's Yid from Kovna and the old time, and words like Avekstel Amishpoche, Ufhadevin Kinder, Stellen Deures. I mean, Tachlis, you're working, you support a family, you create a family, you bring up children, you allow them to grow in Torah, and so on and so forth. If you look at that picture, then you're oisik in doing something that's a core Yiddish zach. Sometimes you're lucky where the etzem work is something, but a Yid who used to have to peddle with shmatas and shmonses from place to place. But he wasn't peddling with shmatas and shmonses. He was being oisik in bringing home bread so that the kids would grow up, and they grow up with a Yiddish aveg, be mamshach deiris, learn, etc. It's a nafgemina if we can take on an extra job or spend extra time with the family. It's a nafgemina if we have a better job, but it's going to share in the kedushas habayis. So all of these factors, besides the etzem thing you're doing, working means, but to be honest that that's what you're doing, is you're always calibrating. If I'm taked working because I want to shalva kishtub, be mefarnes kishtub, so you said stuck of a chalais, and so on, so if what I'm making so much money to give tzedakah, but the arman is never there. I'm never there with my wife. I'm never with the kids. I'm never part of a tzibur. So at least that, I think, is a framework. If we would have more of that mindset, I think it would be a framework for people to be able to understand it as such.
What I understand that the Rosh Hashiva is saying is that we got too used to measuring ourselves and others by career. That, you know, a career defines me in a positive way, or if my career is underwhelming, it defines me in a less positive way. But it's all about career, because society has infiltrated our way of thinking and our way of feeling that a career defines a person. But the truth of the matter is that according to Torah, the only reason we involve ourselves in careers is because the Gemara says that the chiyuv of Talmud Torah, which is loyamush, bagisa b'yayman v'layla, the Gemara asks in brachas, yachol dvarim kichsavam, that it's literal, that you should always be learning Torah. So the Gemara says, Talmud loyma v'asavta deganecha, hanik bohem minik derech eretz, that a person has to balance his devotion to learning Torah together with the panasa, with bringing home enough to be able to sustain himself, his family, and be able to survive comfortably in panasa. Like the Mishnah says, a person should always teach himself or teach his child a umnis nikiya v'kala. That's the criteria. Because harbe osu Kirab Shimon Yechai, who says a person should devote himself only to Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will miraculously support him, v'loy also b'yadam. Kirab Yishmael, v'also b'yadam. But that's, career is incidental to who we are and what our Tafkid HaChayim is. So Sheshiva is pointing out that raising Doris, which Parshas Vayera, when the Ribbono Shel Olam was planning on Mapechas Doim VaHamoira, and he says, "Amachasa ani me'Avram es Asher ani Yose." I'm going to destroy a part of civilization. How could I do this without informing Avram Avinu of my plans? Because Avram Avinu was such a great partner with me in running the world. And we know what Avram Avinu accomplished. Thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people he brought to the Dasa Emes. He brought to the realization of the Ribbono Shel Olam's Ein Od Milvadoi. And Afal Pi Kein, it says in the Pasuk, Ki Yedativ L'man Asher Yitzaveh Es Bonav Es Beiso Yachrov V'Shomru Derech Hashem, to establish generations of God-fearing people. And that is why Avraham Avinu, who established ultimately the greatest family that ever existed, that's why he's a partner with Hashem, that he has to tell him what he's going to do in Sdoim v'Amora. So the message that the Rosh Hashiva stressed was the message of family, of raising generations. But it goes beyond that also. Limud HaTorah, which is really the central theme of tonight's evening, is how do we maximize our devotion to Torah, how do we do it in a way that's profitable and beneficial and enjoyable, as I saw many of the questions. Parnassa is a necessity. Spiritual growth is more than that. We can't exist without that. That's what we're here for. Im lamadata Torah harbe, and we've strayed from that. We've actually strayed from what life is all about, because the culture within which we live, exist, and thrive is a culture that puts career at the top of its value system. Now, the Chayvus Al Vavis about choosing a career based on inclinations and feelings, I don't know, you know, let's say a person wants to be a doctor. He wants to give to society. Or for whatever reason, he wants to be a doctor. There could be many reasons that are shallow, and there could be many reasons that are profound. But in order for a person to undertake that profession, it's a lifetime of training. You have to go to pre-med, and you have to go to medical school, and then there's the different shlavim in medical school, till finally a person could start practicing in the medical profession. Yes, he wants to be a doctor, but let's say he foregoes that and decides to find a way to sustain his mishpacha less glamorously, in a more simple way. But throughout those grueling years of preparation, he's able to, like we just heard, be busy engaged with his family and raising children al derech ha-Torah, le-Torah, le-Te'uda, and himself constantly being a koveya itim la-Torah, and what all that brings out in a person, the dikduka mitzvahs, the growth in sneers, the being able to leich ami boy b'chaderecha, to insulate himself as best he could from all the ruchos roes that surround us in society. Does the Rebbeinu Shlom want him to follow that inclination of investing a good decade in building a stepping stone towards a medical profession when he could take a much more down-to-earth profession and not skip a beat from his yeshiva years into his work years and further? I don't know if one is mechuyif to follow that inclination as a nevuah that tells him this is your calling in life. And that's medical, where your service, that's a service profession. What about the legal profession? How much you have to invest to meaningfully exist, succeed in sustaining yourselves and making it in the legal profession is also very difficult. So it's confusing. I want to be a lawyer, but who says that the Chayvus Al Vavis' rule applies to forego something more simple and down to earth, which allows you to continue being a Ben Torah seamlessly when investing in all those might be in compromising your continuation as a non-stop life of being a Ben Torah? So it's a confusing question. But I beg to feel that probably the Chayvus Al Vavis in most cases in our society, the way we have it, I don't think could be taken literally as a message from Hashem that this is what you have to do. And I beg Mr. Rosh Hashiva if he agrees with that.
I would try to send Chayvus Al Vavis. There's a difference. People are not honest with themselves in a certain sense. So let's take a marshal. Somebody has tremendous musical talent. So that's very clear that music is a calling of his. What oifin, should he play at chasnas, should he play it, should he teach in school or whatever, but b'chol oifin that. But when you look at things like, let's say, lawyer, how much of it is prestige? How much of it is anticipated income? Is it the pshat that the person, we have a hard time identifying, like Rashiva said, identifying a real, like a doctor. So you have the much of somebody who's, let's say, a person who's very personable. He's also Isaac with people. So you say, okay, a therapist of some sort of his asks with people. But for careers that are lucrative and demanding, you have the issue of how much of it is the glamour of it and how much of it is take nafshi choshka. And you know, how much is it that the person has that talent? So you need, I mean, it's always something like that, you should run by a Rebbe because of this. A person has negius. He would like to do things that are chashev in people's eyes. That's the sheichad. Forget the money sheichad. The sheichad of, he's a this, he's a that. I think Rav Zavavis is speaking more down-to-earth netias in terms of a person has a gifted hand. In the old days when careers correct were simple, so a person was a silversmith, a person plowed the land, they were very, very direct koiches that it's clear HaKadosh Baruch Hu is channeling me. But to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is channeling me to something that I find glamorous, a person needs to be choishish that that's not what's driving, not the Chayv Zavavis is making that decision.
So would it be correct to say, based on what the Rashid said, that it used to be because the trades were crafts and things of that nature, I used to be able to find inherent yeshuva shel olam in the craft itself, and now we have to almost move that notion from the etzem melacha that I do, the inherent work that I do, into supporting a family, almost second.
Yesh for yesh. You know, it's not, there's nothing. Some people are mushal. Let's say a person works as a frum therapist and a frum society, or even not, he's helping people very directly, and it's very clear to see a certain calling in what he's doing. Let's say somebody is an emergency room physician or something of that nature, but there are many areas where we look at the bigger picture and see the chetimtza. You know, this is my zeyas apayim, but the lechem is for the family. Each situation, a person has to sit down and say, how did the Rebbe Shalom, why did the Rebbe Shalom put me in this situation? There are people who can't sit still a minute, and there's rizim and the charutzim, and business is a natural orientation. The person who built the yeshiva by us, in terms of the mominess, and Rabbi Merkin was a far Rockaway, I told him once, jokingly, that had you been a Talmud today, they would have given you Ritalin and you would have stopped you dead in your tracks. Baruch Hashem, you don't sit still a minute and you're building and doing and so on. So if a person, a certain amount is in a tias hanefesh, and then a person sits back and says, what did the Rebbe Shalom, what's the picture add up to?
Okay, moving on to the next question. Again, a springboard for a larger topic. My son is in his mid-20s. Baruch Hashem, he's learning well in what is considered to be a top yeshiva, a yeshiva where the bachur who attended college are looked down upon. His hasmada and drive to be a big Talmud Chacham are sources of great pride for my wife and myself. However, we are deeply concerned about his future. While we would love him to join the ranks of Shevet Levi, the reality is for the majority of boys in this situation, in the blink of an eye, he will be looking for a source of parnasa, already with the responsibility of supporting a family of a number of children. Part of me wants to force him to begin preparing for this next stage of life. However, the famous story of the Nitziv becoming a shoemaker haunts me at night. If my son is one of the few who has the capacity to join the ranks of Shevet Levi and be a leader in Klal Yisrael, far be it from me to be the one to convince him that he is not capable. How do I navigate this delicately without hurting his self-esteem and making him feel that he can be the other? More generally, how do we communicate to the majority of our children that there is nothing at all but the other about transitioning out of Shevet Levi at the appropriate time, while maintaining the perspective of supreme primacy of Talmud Torah and Harbatzos Torah, if one has the ability?
Thank you. Your turn to go first.
It's a little confusing how the question is framed. Oh, but it's a little contradictory. Also, the boy's in the mid-20s. He's still a bachar, obviously. Sounds like. He's not in koil yet. And he's learning well. And his asmada and drive to be a big Talmud Chacham are sources of great pride for my wife and myself. Now, also, it seems that the ranks of Shevet Levi sounds like it's in play here, because he loses sleep at night because he's afraid to make the mistake that was almost made with the Nitziv. If the boy is just mediocre or average or so-so in achievement, he wouldn't mistake him with a potential Nitziv. I mean, we all know who the Nitziv was. So this person is not sleeping at night Because
I may dramatize a little bit.
I know. I'm also dramatizing. What I'm saying is, in essence, there's another word here that bothers me very much, not from a Torah aspect, but from America. We're all Americans. Part of me wants to force him to begin preparing for the next stage of his life. Talking about a young man in his mid-20s, and he's doing well in life, and he's happy with himself, and here is a father that's entertaining, forcing him to change course. I mean, that's a no-no. I mean, even if it would be the opposite, that the father wants him to learn and the boy wants to go to school. Also, you don't force. Who forces an adult boy of 25 years old what to do? It doesn't make... So this is a very confusing... Now, on the general terms, that's obvious. We know that in our Ashkafa, someone that's Torah im derech eretz, kavata itim la Torah, arbe yosu kereb Yishmael va'olso biyadam. Yes, there was a tkufa of decades after the Holocaust where the Gedolim tried to gear as many of our young to long-term learning, and it became almost like not long-term learning became almost a stigma. But like always in history, things correct themselves b'meshach the years. And if we could gear a young man to learn in yeshiva b'asmada rabbah and do a healthy amount of koilal years, which it sounds to me that this father is entertaining foregoing koilal years. Now, for someone that's learning well, the risk involved in not postponing the training for career past a healthy amount of koilal years of excellent learning while being in the early embryonic stages of raising a family, of interacting with a spouse, and raising the beginning of a family of children while in what the Rosh Hashiva calls in a sefer, the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, while remaining in the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, there is no better graduate school for life than those years of kolel for the one who's achieving well in kolel. So that gets lost here in the shuffle. What's going to happen already if it's going to be 5 great years in kolel and just make it bare bones existence in Gashmias, because right now the couple is growing immensely in Ruchnias and in devotion to Torah and in the bliss and happiness that comes with being Shakua in Torah. But on the bigger picture, is that the tachlis to be a Kli Kodesh or to be Shevet Levi for life or to be the Orchas Chaim Shevet Levi for life, where you could compartmentalize Shevet Levi into Hanig Bohem Minig Derech Eretz? Of course, we don't have an Ashkofa issue with that. Usually, the right thing happens. Those of us that are geared to remaining Torosam Unosam find that path. Those that life dictates, and that's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they should be Hanig Bohem Minig Derech Eretz, they find the path. Why this father has a potential netziv on his hand and he wants to force him at pre-kolel years to forgo learning and right now starting to train for a career, I'm a little confused. I am a little confused. But the end of the question is very clear. How do we communicate to the majority of our children that there's nothing at all b'dieved about transitioning out of Shevet Levi at the appropriate time? Yes, while maintaining the primacy of Torah, of course. And that's what the whole Sefer is about, Orchas Chaim. That's what the Sefer is really about. I said it in a good convention recently that was on Shabbos because I didn't want it to be taped. I say, in my experience as a Rebbe, and it's many years that I'm in the Smedrash Rebbe, it's almost 40 years, I found that those that fell when they transitioned to the real, quote-unquote, to the working world, It wasn't an ischachus. What they were presenting in yeshiva, both in asmada and in following the zdarim and playing by the book and being engaged in their learning, but there was a certain conflict between their excelling in what the yeshiva's rigorous curriculum was, and also there was a little bit of them that was always, you know, connected to a broader world, to a world of enjoyment, to a world of fun, to a world of, you know, that it's not all about Yoshev Oyel. Those that were Yoshev Oyelim during their years in yeshiva, whether it was late high school, early Beis Medrash, Eretz Yisrael, post-Eretz Yisrael, Kolel, they were Yoshev Oyelim. So when the time came and these Yoshev Oyelim had to transition, if you're a Yoshev Oyel, you're a Yoshev Oyel. And even if you have to work your 7-8 hours a day to sustain a mishpacha, you're a Yoshev Oyel at heart. You're going to figure it out with Adracha, with the Rebbe holding your hand, but you're not going to have that plummeting down Me'igra Rama Labira Mikta. When you see that plummeting down Me'igra Rama Labira Mikta, there was a certain part of him that was always waiting for that moment of escape, where he's not anymore confined in a world of spirituality and he could join the great world out there, that tremendous world out there that young people always dream that, who knows, I'll be part of that. And I think that is a big answer to some of this, what we see, that someone that was doing great in his yeshiva kollel years slips sometimes so badly as he goes into the workplace.
I'd like, first of all, the point that Shiva made about a 25-year-old being told what to do, I think it's a big problem that we don't put achrayas on children early enough. In other words, at 25, and I'm not, again, it's not clear if he's married or not married, what a father can do.
He wants to force someone married them?
I don't know. I had the same Shaila.
He's going to have Shalom Bayis on his hands.
But in other words, the father's role can be and should be, he can tell them, this is what I can do for you if you want to stay and learn. I can't do more than this for you. And, you know, whatever you do, the father over 25 years should have given the two messages. If it is a person who's a Torah Yid and a Baal HaBos, he should have given a child the haracha for the Lomdei Torah and his self-value that I'm happy that what he should feel, the son should feel that he has a dugma of somebody who feels that he's accomplishing Torah. You know, if the father would give it off, now the son has two drachim. There's a piece about sitting and learning. There are two nekudas that I think are missing in the mix. The Rambam, when he speaks about Shevet Levi, puts in two words that I really, most people don't put the dogish on it or the puzzle on it. He says, nadva ruchai. It's not something you can mandate be'etzim. It has to be, it's a shaloike derech ha'olam. The Rambam's point is, derech ha'olam is hanig b'min ha'eretz, and there's to be a nedivas ruach. So if my son is doing fine and good, he has to make that decision. He has to come and decide and say, you know what? I know that there are not many career opportunities and not many Rosh Hashiva jobs open, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it has to come as a responsible, mature adult. This is the path I'm taking. So even the father should not be conveyed, not only for the reason that at 25 a person should have responsibility and have a sense of achrayus, both for parnasa and for his life, but also learning has to come mitzad nedivas ruach. I want to add another knach that maybe, and again, Rosh Hashiva touched on it, but I think it's today machmas shvachon of in-laws and supporters, I think it's become a tushtish. I want to say over two maises. And two different types of people, but the same message. One was I believe it was when Ron Kiel got married in Eretz Yisrael, the Shvagas decided to buy a ticket, obviously Shiva, and to come to the Chasana. The Baba was still alive, and she found out about it. She said, where does the yeshiva man have money from? And she wouldn't let it. There was a certain sense, but it's normal to come for Chasana. But it's not normal to be Shevet Levi, and it both come together. You know, Kodesh has its gvulis and what it comes with. That's, I wanted to say over a story from somebody who's a very different type of person, but also took me very much. This person, I'll say who it is at the end. This person came from a more modern Eretz Yisrael Rabbanisha background. Quite a modern Rabbanisha background, very worldly, very with it. And he married a girl who was a neighbor of ours, so I was very friendly with him, and very batamta, younger man, he was learning well, and a worldly person, an Israeli. His sister-in-law got married in America, some sister-in-law, brother, whatever, and he went for the chasna. So I asked him, how many days are you going? So he said, 2 days. He's landing on the plane and this and that. So I was shocked. I said, you don't want to see everything. You're such a curious, open, worldly person. He said, I'm chalishing to see it. But I asked myself, if I'd be working in a law firm, how many days would I take off at a chasana? And then he said to me, how I respect my job is how people will respect me. The person today is the Rav HaRosh of Eretz Yisrael, David Lau. Dudi Lau, he was married a girl. But it took me very stark. It's ke'ilu, but derech klal, somebody who's headed for Shevet Levi, it should be nicker. It should be nicker that he's bodel from the olam. Lemal yusa, that people give people opportunities and they live bakvemt and so on. But somewhere along the line, you have to recognize it's not just, should I be a lawyer, should I sit and learn? It should be nicker that this person is not shaykh to Olam HaMaisa, or it should be nicker that he's not shaykh to Shevet Levi, with all respect. I think we've lost a little bit of the sensitivity that it is two different drachim. It is two different olamas.
We'll transition now from some parenting questions. We'll go back to that in a little bit, to some questions from the workplace. And I understand that I might not understand all the challenges exactly. So if someone wants to follow up on what the Rosh Yeshiva say in a broad sense with a follow-up question, please raise your hand. So we'll start with one about learning. I'm in my 40s, and I've spent many years learning Gemara. I finished numerous Masechtos. I learned Afyomi for a number of years. I enjoyed learning Gemara, but never truly loved it, nor did I feel it inspired. Of late, I'm spending most of my day learning schedule, learning Chumash, Mishnayos, Musar, Hashkafa, Chassidus. I feel a lot more fulfilled. How crucial is it to be learning Gemara every day, if at all? At this stage of my life, shouldn't the main focus of my learning be feeling inspired?
And when he says on his daily schedule what you have to do, he speaks about being Maver Sedra, you should be good, finish your parshas in Matzibur, Shnayim Mikra Vechatargum, and Bechlal, the person's curriculum a little bit. But then he goes on and he says, V'yo Iker B'Gemara, She'o Eiches B'Gemara, Ein Lecha Mida Toiva Eimenu. There's nothing more useful in Ruchnius than being an Oicheis B'Gemara. And then that he adds, with Utnan, the Salmut Torah Keneged Kulam. Salmut Torah Keneged Kulam, that we say every morning, we don't realize what we're saying. Salmut, it's Melashim Talmud. And the Rosh learns that you have to learn Talmud, you must learn Talmud. You can't go along without Talmud. So in the broader question that this young man is in his 40s and he's today learning, obviously, it sounds from what he's describing, it should take him a few hours of learning every day. I don't know, Chumash, Mishnayos, Musar, Hashkafa, and Chassidus. I can't see how he could do this in less than a few hours. But I don't believe not having Gemara as part of the schedule. I mean, the Shulchan Aruch says you have to be yashlish. So, but no Gemara, I don't think, is always gehalten al pi Torah. He has to address why is he more taken taka to all these limudim, including Mishnayos, more than learning Gemara. What's he missing in Gemara that he can't even fit it in? It's something like he has almost. So there's part of the story that we really don't know. There must be some kind of, for lack of a better guess, that there must be some problem that he has navigating the Gemara, which we have in our youth many, many times. But today, with art school, one of the greatest gifts that Kodesh Baruch Hu has given us in the last generation is that we have the ability to use Gemaras that are help us walk through them. So to say no Gemara, I believe, is not acceptable. I think so.
We have a Derech Mesura, but I'd like to try to explain it, maybe, if I can give a mashal for it. What keeps a person healthy, one of the major things, is exercise. A person walks an hour a day or does whatever other, it keeps a person healthy. A person gets a massage, he feels very good, but it doesn't take the place of it, and it's a mistake when you go in and you'll drop your walking and instead let somebody massage you. The difference is between walking, expending energy, and being active to being acted upon. And I think that's where, again, we don't know a lot of the story. When a person takes a Musa Sefer that connects to Chassidus and so on, he feels very inspired. And that's very good. But that doesn't build the atzmius of a person. So it's an immediate ruchnistic gratification. But when a person learns Gemara, and I think one of the major problems is that we tend to learn Gemara passively. In other words, Baruch Hashem, we have great Magdei Shurim. Baruch Hashem, we have art scrolls and all sorts of things, tapes. So we get used to listening to Blat Gemara. When you learn with a chavrusa and you're able to be active, you build a whole different metzias into yourself. Ein lecha bigger musa than Rabbeinu Yoina, and Rabbeinu Yoina on his Pirush on Ovis, when he speaks about mesunim bedin, he says, because dinei mamonis is what's called haskel v'yodeh oisei lekim. The hearing the Rabbeinu Shalom is through dinei mamonis, and it's a slower process. In other words, when you look in a yeshiva and there's a musa shmuz that they should come on time, should this, that, the other thing, there tends to be a fairly instant response, especially if it's buttressed with a shtickle einish or a shtickle reward. So there's very, very, but that's not what made a bachan to ben Torah. It's an immediate necessity. So active learning, and that's why I think Gemara becomes very lackadaisical. To sit back and listen to a blat, okay, it's a good start. So if you're maschil and you don't have, so you listen to a good blat and then you learn it yourself, matoy manoin. But the real, we have by us in the Tzibur in Washington, D.C., is many people there never learned in yeshiva ever, in any yeshiva in their life. The old dar, the young dar is a very, very different dar. And we have occasionally, twice a year, we have a big one called Yom Iyun. We pick a sugya. We draw up packages, and then people from the killer come in, a lot of people, we had 180 people last time, and they learn with Bachrim Yungalait Chavrusa, Rabbanim come, and they learn 2.5 hours Chavrusa, then there's a shir on it, then there's a few different, a little bit different Musa. And I've seen people walk out, change people. People who had it in for the yeshiva, they never had that experience. These are very bright people, but very learned people, but the experience of working and back and forth, tell me what you see, what it says. Don't you think this, the other, that's an experience unlike any other. If a person has it, bederech klal, that's the meat and the bread and meat of a person's personality. The divrei chizuk, divrei musa are extremely vital. The problem was, in yeshiva, we didn't touch it, and then afterwards, we overdose on it. So, nimtsu chasa mikan v'chasa mikan. If a person would have the right mus in each place, I think it would be a much healthier mahala. I
just want to raise one point. This gentleman is saying he feels a lot more fulfilled now that he's foregoing Gemara. And then before he writes, he never truly felt it inspiring. Is that an absolute criteria in Ruchnius? That you should be gravitating to the feel-good, to the feeling of being inspired? That should be the dominant criteria in making decisions? So we could have a kumsitz of 2 and 3 hours and get tremendously inspired and dveikus. How is that balanced with foregoing an hour and a half or 2 hour chavrusashaft on Friday night? But I feel much more inspired from dveikus, from zmiris, koechsoif. I went on 25 minutes of koechsoif and back and again, then I heard a vart from the Nesivas Shalom. And that felt so much better. Is that really a proper criteria, or it's a good? You have a problem. You don't feel fulfilled. Go to a rebbe. Rebbe, how come I don't feel fulfilled? Something's wrong. You're presenting symptoms, the symptoms of spiritual unhealthiness, that you're not getting inspired from the age-old Limud HaGemara. What is the inyan? You don't feel fulfilled, like the Meshiva just said. We have to address it. Maybe the way you learn, the way you're more passive, you're not being active. But it seems that so many of us get bogged down on this not feeling fulfilled and not feeling inspired. And mainly we have to go to different pastures to find inspiration and fulfillment. And that alone is an issue unto itself.
Yes, if I can comment, I think this is... You know, today there's talk about Neo Hasidus and things. I don't want to get off the topic. You probably have another evening scheduled. That is the topic. I think it's important to understand where Dimyon comes into play and where Seichel comes into play. And both are important koiches. Let's give a marshal. We have a goof that works and runs and walks and talks. And has its limits. You put adrenaline in, it goes much quicker, much further, and much less fatigued. So Chacham will say, okay, I'll do an adrenaline shot every day. The answer is, the goof will become sapatit in no time, and also the adrenaline effect will wear off. It'll be both. There's a reason when a person has a moment of inspiration, it's a shtup. In other words, ko'echsoif is a tremendous shtup. Okay, how do you think you have the Ribbono Shel Olam? When you feel up there, or when you tachlis go and, like the Rabbeinu Yonah says, Rabbeinu Yonah, who's the Baal Musa, says, in understanding dinei mamonis, I dehei Ribbono Shel Olam. I want to move it another place with it. There was a very famous Jewish singer, we won't mention the name, who was very b'shaita, he was very inspirational, his songs very inspirational, and up in the clouds. Did he succeed in putting down a family? It's beautiful to speak about the high in the Shamis and Friday, this and that. But the day in, day out grind. So you have these people that are up in the clouds, and generally mean it, but do they have what it takes? Does that translate into the grind of life? When you speak about the beautiful love of children and the aura and this and that, and you can't translate it into the patience, dedication, and grind, then you create a monster. It's like somebody who's working on adrenaline, or worse, and you basically, you think you're there, you run out of steam, you destroy yourself, and you accomplish nothing. So all of these inyanim that are inspirational, a chassidish atish gives something. But understand what it gives is a shtup, an inspiration to roll up your sleeves and to work. It's just like the beautiful music at a chasna with the wonderful words people speak and so on and so forth. If a person thinks that's what life looks like, he's in for a real, real surprise. it means, but he has to be able to translate, say, this means, therefore, building a bias and the shechina, all that means patience, hard work, and slogging on. And that's what it is. Understanding Ribbono Shel Olam is only one thing. Understanding his halachas. Understanding how, what's mine and what's his. When do I owe it to him? What are my responsibilities? Working it out connects a person to Ribbono Shel Olam, even if he doesn't feel it at the moment. You see the person. You need the shtup. So same thing like the guf has a adrenaline. There's moments when you need it. There's moments when you need a cup of coffee. There's moments when you need it, and we do need it. But understand its place and its measure. If a person is fatveket and doesn't do much, then he's living in an oil of dimyan and an oil of sheker. He thinks he's in the clouds. One thing is he's not on the ground. But that he's in the clouds, that I'm not sure. That's, I don't know where he is.
Any specific follow-ups about learning after transitioning out of yeshiva?
Just the gentleman writes, look what he's done. I finished numerous mesechtes. I spent many years learning Gemara. I learned Daf Yomi for a number of years. I enjoyed learning Gemara, but never truly loved it. Nor do I feel it inspiring. It's also, I don't know, what is he saying? He enjoyed learning Gemara. I wish, you know what I mean? Enjoyed. What's his problem? But he never truly loved it. Okay, that's a criteria. If the Masorah is that Gemara is that important part of our spiritual diet, so he's foregoing on his own something that's such a central part of our growth as Talmidei Chachamim, as Yoidei Teresecha, the Loimdei Teresecha, Shema, because of a lack of love. Okay.
So let's say if we would change the question a little bit. He never really liked it. He slept through it because it was an issue.
But he said he enjoyed it.
Well, that's a new person.
Oh, a different person.
New person.
No, many years he liked it.
One thing we know, that the person who wrote this was confused.
And you know who's not getting credit in this whole evening? The Yetzer Hara. Nobody says he's the silent, you know. He's the elephant in the room and nobody's talking about him. Why can't, you know, he comes and says, why are you learning too much Gemara? Leave alone the Gemara. Let's do some Hasidus instead. That can't be the Yetzer Hara.
Okay. Another question from the workplace. Again, a general question, so anyone with more specific follow-ups, we invite them to ask. In a day and age where the Vice President of the United States is taken to task and criticized for refusing to dine together with women in the absence of his wife, it seems unrealistic to adhere to some of the Gedara we have been taught in our yeshiva. Unfortunately, when our standards prove to be unfeasible, rather than establishing new, less severe Gedara, we fail to set up any at all, leading to a breakdown in sneas in both the workplace and in our communities. How can we adapt to this new reality to ensure that the Kedusha of our community is maintained in a world which is antithetical to the very notion?
So again, you know, the questions are not always crafted exactly, but I think, and one of the things I think I mentioned was, Kedushim Tiyu is a very, very fundamental chiyuv. And the word k'doshim tira says gedurim in arayas. In other words, a person needs to understand, A, everybody has a yetzahara. That's what he are. We finally got the satan into the act over here. Everyone has a yetzahara. And nobody is exempt from being nichshol. The Rambam says, G'doyla Amoraim would tell, G'doyla Chachamim would tell the Talmidim to be careful, make sure about my daughter, my kala. I'm not sure if the Rambam meant that it wasn't true and he said it to teach it to them, or it was true and they were not embarrassed. But in either case, the Yisayre Yisayres is Arayas Nafshash Adam M'chamdosan. A person's first question is to himself, what are my G'dorim? The mitzvah, my Rebbe Chaim Shmulevitz used to say, and again, many things I wrote, but I'll. He used to say, it says, Hayom Rav, Ayonis Bischus, what was the Yam Nas? Bischus Yosef Vayonis. So Reb Chaim asked, Yosef ran away from the Nisayan. He wasn't able to be Nisayan, he avoided the Nisayan. So why is that a Schus? So Reb Chaim would say, the Avoida of Arayas is the avoiding the Nisayan. Once a person is in the whirlpool, getting out of that is almost impossible. So a person has to ask himself, I'm now entering another world, what am I gedarim? What's appropriate to do is give yourself a month to see what could work, what's needed, you can adjust it, you don't know when you're going into it. But the gedar of Arayas is the kiyum of Arayas. Rachman al-Slam, the Yisuk Atzmoy, when you're there, there's nothing. That's not the person is kemat helpless. So people need to ask themselves, and you need to have somebody that you can sit and talk it over with and say, this is the situation, this is the environment I'm in, guide me. Tell me what are effective gedarim, what are gedarim that are doable because, you know, I'm going to look strange or whatever. You have to take into account, because if you're not being oimed in that necessarily, it's not going to work. Be misyayetz with somebody that you feel understands is a chacham. But it's not the pshat, I'll make a gedar if I have a problem. You'll never get there. You'll have the problem, and by that time it's late. The avoida of arayas is the gedarim, and every person kvi masha adam. There's some people that they can't see a passing person without helloing and getting involved in. He needs a certain type of gedarim. And there's another person that's more restrained. He needs a different type of gedar. So gedarim is the etzem avoida of it.
The Gemara says in the end of Chesk Sabbatim, I think, that Noshim, that used to do their laundry, they used to do it by the waterfront. That's what in those days they used to do. So what about passing the waterfront when women are doing their laundry? Sounds like it was a relatively provocative setting according to the culture of those times. And the Gemara gives us a criteria, Ikadar Kachvina and Lekadar Kachvina. Now Ikadar Kachvina, Lekadar Kachvina doesn't mean ones in absolute terms. It means if you have to go really out of your way to avoid it in the norm, then you go and you'll be okay. And I think that's the first lesson. When a person enters new uncharted waters and he has a difficulty transitioning from the concepts that he lived with when he was a yeshiva man, and now that he's in the workplace among secular people and among modern people, how does he navigate it? I think the first rule is Darka Achrina. What you can't avoid, make a scene, insult people, make yourself look foolish, that all goes into Lekadar Kachrina. But if there's Ikadar Kachrina, that extra bantering, that staying around for too long, that befriending people where really there's no real reason for it, you're just as much as a mensch if you do or you don't, and not everybody's supposed to be everybody's best friend, and people don't raise eyebrows if you're not. So that's something that you could walk in with very clear guidelines. Another thing, I think it's a Groy Mishle. There's a pasuk, B'chol drachecha da'eyu, v'hu yiyasher archarsecha. I think it's a Groy. I heard this many, many years ago from my father, Zichrono Livracha. You're going into uncharted areas. You don't know how it's going to go, that oirach. I have to go carve out a path. How do I know? I don't know this. But if b'chol drachecha, in those that are already paved roads, da'eyu, where it's not complex, your da'eyu, your da'as elokei avicha, you live with Yerushalayim, you live with Ehrlichkeit, then in the uncharted roads that you have to embark on, hu yiyasher achosecha, he's going to give you siyata d'shmaya. So if you have sneas at home, if you have sneas on your phone, if you have sneas in your interaction outside your workplace, with your neighbors, with your friends, with your cousins, with your third cousins, with your wife's friends, etc., 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 and there you, the old yeshiva bachur, you have a problem. How are you going to navigate the new areas? Who, he, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, is going to give you siyata d'shmaya, hu yiyasher achosecha? Is it a gra?
I don't know, but it's very.
Someone says it in the Mishlei. I don't remember who.
Rabbi Feiner would probably.
Yeah, no Rebbe. It's a gra. Okay, wow. Baruch Hashem. What would we do without Rabbi Feiner?
Any more specific follow-up questions to this? Okay, good. We're running out of time. The next question opens up a general topic. We would love the Rosh Yeshiva to comment in general, because this was a topic that many people sent it about. The question is going to be extremely, extremely specific, because often I hear when I discuss these issues with some people is that I don't necessarily get the details of what's going on. So I'm going to give a lot of details. But the main topic seems to be that we have been very focused in our community, Baruch Hashem, on making sure that all the technology is filtered properly and all the content is something which belongs in a Beis Yisrael and belongs, our children could have exposure to. What's now becoming more of an issue is not necessarily the content of the technology, but the fact that the technology itself and the amount of time spent with technology seems to have very, from different studies in the psychology world, has adverse effects in terms of anxiety and depression, and just in terms of being able to concentrate properly. So the question is now, how do we adapt to this new problem that technology seems to be posing? So I'll read the specific question, but I think from what I can tell from the emails, people want to hear in general the Rosh Yeshiva's take. In general, when it comes to technology and devices, we employ filters and we try to oversee our children's exposure on whatever consoles and devices it is as kosher and as limited as possible. It's not an optimal situation, but it's the reality. Most kids, and we're talking about from the best yeshivas, are wired in. My question isn't about technology usage as a whole, but to help understand why kids are spending so much of their time on devices, and to determine how bad this really is. Which brings me to Fortnite. Fortnite is a game where 100 players land on an island. I had no idea what it was until this question. Then have to use skills to fight until only one is left alive. It's been downloaded more than 200 million times since its launch, and chances are that your children and their friends are on it. I don't think they're talking to the Rosh Hashiva. But whether parents know about it or not, if you don't know about it from your children, you might know about it from the media coverage. It focuses on addictive gameplay and the slew of articles, warnings about its compulsion loop and dopamine trap. And while the central premise of this game is to play being addictive is true, what many educators and experts miss is that Fortnite is not really a game about shooting people. There are many games where you can shoot people that aren't nearly as popular or prevalent. It's a game about escape, a place to hang out with your friends, and there is where my question lies. Is escape in moderation healthy for adolescents? To the extent that escape is healthy, and adults are worried about their kids are spending too much time on smartphones and consoles, but at the same time, they're constantly policing and restricting their ability to go off on their own and hang out with friends in places we don't want them going. Do we really prefer our kids hanging out in bowling alleys and pool halls rather than in our own basements? Obviously, it would be great if all they wanted to do was learn all the time, but the reality is that we as parents living in the U.S. in 2019 need to make decisions and find the right balance between the best of a lot of not great options.
I just heard about Fortnite for the first time this weekend. So Friday, I didn't even know it existed.
But I was told... You learned something tonight.
But I also heard that there's a lot of foul language in between the 100 participants. I understand that there's a lot of foul.
Does anybody want to tell us? Does anybody?
No, whoever knows about it knows it's the part of it is that the in the back and forth, it's indiscriminate, the 100 people. You don't choose your 100 partners. I don't know where the 100 partners are, but they might be people that are not the most savory people. And there's a lot of foul language in the interaction that's going on. So is that something very civilized, the menschlich, and it's only about a question of escape? It's not a good place. And it's not even from religious point of view, even from menschlich point of view. And addiction is shmartim nafsho seichem. We know that addiction, one addiction leads to the next one, because if you're not going to be able to get your fix in forthright, you'll get your fix, chas v'shalom, in a different way. And before we know it, we have a full-blown problem on our hands that might end up in a rehab center in about 7 or 8 years. So it's a big rachmanis. I mean, we're underestimating it. It's really underestimating. Now, the question of letting your kids hang out, we shouldn't be restrictive about letting them hang out. This is a serious suggestion. What do you mean, let kids hang out? Who are they hanging out with? Chavera. The Tatzileini Ayoim Uvachol Yoim Mechavera Mishachin Ra. These are the most dangerous things. Will a kid hang out on the town with whom? So why is that an alternative to this unhealthy game? I'm very confused by the question.
I would like to add two points. First of all, I think we haven't done our due diligence in terms of providing good outlets for kids. In other words, kids need downtime, depending on the age and so on, and therefore trips. You know, it's an extremely important thing to organize trips, hikes, doing things that are fun, exciting, etc., so that the kids do have an alternative. Baruch Hashem, we put so much money and effort into the learning and things, and that's needed. But what happens in downtime, something like B'Shaita Pirchei did. Today, you need something more different. But I think it's something we should put our minds to providing a lot of fun activities, so at least this dark achrina, like the Rosh Yeshiva said. There's a second akuda for older kids, and this is what I mean, Baruch Hashem Yeshiva, it's a certain approach. I start the other end. A bacha is not performing. And b'derech klal, as soon as a bacha gets involved in something, he's underperforming. So I say, I don't know what, but you're wasting your time in yeshiva. You're half asleep. You're not active. You don't know. One of the problems we have in yeshivas is there's not enough testing and accountability. When kids go to real rigorous college, so they drink on the weekends, but they're studying because they have to do tests. If there would be a sense of, I'm tired and because I need to work and I need to produce and I didn't produce, my Shver Zechayin Evracha used to push learning quickly in yeshiva. And the way he phrased it was, a younger man has a real oinus. His kid is sick, or later, maybe a hospital, and 3 days is out. He comes back 3 days later, and he doesn't quite see what he missed. So he says to himself, you know what, I'll take another 3 days. How many of our kids have the pressure in yeshiva? So if it's a very competitive yeshiva with very smart bottom, so there's always the competition, who's sitting along base medrash, who's saying a chabur, and so on. But yeshiva of regular bachram, there's no reason why they shouldn't have the same level of pressure. Bachram by us do go to school at some point, and I tell them always, in my mind, the chil Hashem is that college work is demanding and yeshiva work is not demanding. It's feel good. I said, over there, when you have to hand in a paper, there's no rachmim. When you get a 40 on a test, you got a 40 on a test. I want to see the same. I'm not asking for more Kavra Torah. I'm asking, don't make me less than a college course. And I think if we'd expect more of the kids working hard, you know, nirpim, it's because there's not the pressure of concrete production. whether it, depending on the Ramah, writing up a chabura, saying a chabura, saying it over, getting criticized. Every yeshiva has its tension, its healthy tension of a challenge. And it's sort of fallen by the wayside. And I think if they'd have more of that, they'd be less inclined for downtime. And then you don't have to ask him, I don't care what you did. All I know is what you're not doing. And this is not a derech. I don't see that you're able to halt mit. And if you tell me you can't get up before 11 o'clock in the morning, I suggest you check into a sleep clinic because, I don't know how you're going to manage life. Like I'll ask a bacha, tell me, do you think this is a lifetime issue? There's no way you can hold down a job and roll in at 11:30 in the morning because you couldn't get up earlier. So that means that the morning after you get married, you're going to be up at 6 o'clock. So what exactly happened? I think putting a little pressure where you can say, listen, yeshiva's not for everybody. You're obviously not cut out for it. You don't seem to be able to follow along with the work. Look for an easier place. I think with a mus, a little bit of that would go a long way to take care of that stuff.
The biggest problem here is that parents, unfortunately, don't have the courage, the ability, the credibility to put their foot down on anything. These parents are helpless. The kids are doing it, the kids are doing it. It's a given. What happened to parenting? We could spend days and weeks discussing where did parenting go? Why don't parents have the ability to say, forthright is out, not in my house. Doesn't work. It works because someone else has it, and the other kid has it, and why did that parent allow it? And it goes on and on and on. When are we going to finally get to a point that it'll be too late, Chas v'Shalom, that we have to wake up and say, hey, who's taking care, who's running the asylum? The inmates are running the asylum, and every Yiddish shtub, Baba Yisrael or Rabin, has inmates, and they're running the asylum. It's a terrible tragedy. And this forthright thing is a vivid picture into it, because it's very destructive. By all secular measurements, it's destructive. It doesn't have any redeeming qualities whatsoever. And all the parents are holding up their hands and surrender. That's it. Well, kids are kids.
So if a parent would come to the yeshiva and say, every kid in my child's class is on this forthright, whatever it is, and they're all communicating with each other. So it's a social experience that my son, if I don't let him have it, he will be the single kid left.
So let me ask you another question. My kid is 11 and a half, 12 years old. Every kid in his class drinks on the weekend, Rahman al-Mitzlan. Every kid, because the parents drink, so the kids drink. They drink at the kiddush. Should I be the only one to stop my kid from drinking hard alcohol at 12 years old? What are you going to answer him? No, how could you? Social pressure. So we're going to allow kids to drink hard liquor at 12? Then what happens if the kids in the class do weed at 13? So again, everybody is doing it. When are we going to realize that forthright might be up there with those things or down there with those things? I'm sorry.
Any follow-up? No one here knows what forthright is.
Very, very much with what she was saying. And I think that the problem starts with Facebook. Facebook is different than everything on social media because the algorithm is addictive. So the parents are addicted already. And now the baby is Fortnite. It's called Fortnite. It's very popular. It's awful. But the father is Facebook. And if we stay on Facebook, by 2025, they're going to be telling us where to cut our hair, where to get our gas, where to get our clothes, because they're just going to give us a few choices of people that are in business with them, and they're going to have everything by then. So I believe that this problem starts with the parents. And if the parents get off of their things, us, me, all of us, and we get off of our things, I think we have a much better shot.
Sage benched.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll ask one more.
Skelim mitzvot.
We'll ask one more question and we'll open it up to the floor just for a few more minutes. I grew up in the late 60s, early 70s. Now you know I didn't write this one. And went to the prominent yeshiva high school in Beis Medrash. In my class and grade, there were kids of all stripes, including children of Rosh Yeshiva and Admar, students of all academic levels, and even some hippies. It was eclectic, from kids with long pace to kids with no pace. Today, many of these students, some who never would have, you never would have guessed, are Rosh Yeshiva and Rabbanim, and many more are lead leaders of Klal Yisrael. Today there's a phenomenon. It's not entirely new, but it's becoming more and more prevalent, and it's the Ivy League of our yeshivas. We have yeshivas for the elite program, and we have yeshivas that by definition are for the students who are weaker. Perhaps those students aren't as bright, self-motivated, or yeshivish. Of course, there are also high schools for kids who are struggling with their Yiddishkeit and everything in between. The mainstream yeshiva, the yeshiva of Agawap, where everyone is meeting on the same ball field, davening in the same base medrash, and classmates who too aspire to, is becoming less and less prevalent. My question is as follows. Does the panel feel like this pattern of exclusive yeshivas for exclusive students is a good thing for Klal Yisrael, one that enhances the learning and self-esteem of our entire future generation across the board, and a healthy way to educate the right kid in the right environment? Or is it something that's good for a yeshiva's self-image, so that they can be in the Ivy League and be called the top yeshiva, but it's having a negative effect on our students overall, whether because of the stigma or because we're trapping kids in second and third place environments?
I mean, I'm not really... Is this a Lamaisidika question? The one who's asking the question wants us to close the Ivy League yeshivas? What's the practical ramifications of the question? Is it about should parents choose for their bright son an Ivy League yeshiva more than a broad-based yeshiva, which we do have both. We have very good yeshivas that fit this criteria to the yeshiva that he went, and we have very good Ivy League yeshivas. So it's a shaila to the parents, to the rabbanim that are advising the parents, or it's a shaila, should we close down all these Ivy League yeshivas that's bothering this gentleman? So, is it really important for me to answer that? Are we, and if we make a decision here in the white shul under the leadership of Feiner that we want to close down all the Ivy League yeshivas, they're closing tomorrow.
I'd like to tell over a short ma'isa shaya with me. Sometimes you hear things that you really can't believe you heard it. And like you hear a logic that you simply just don't, your mind boggles. Somebody, because I have some connection, some moisid, this person was upset that a child of his was not accepted to the moisid. It's not my moisid. And he rang me and he said, "Was haste, today if you don't take a kidney shiva, it's on the street. You need a Sanhedrin to Paskin. How dare you?" V'chul. It wasn't, I was the person who let out his thing up. When he finished, I said, "I feel very bad for you. But by the way, there's another very fine yeshiva in your stadt." And he says, "There's a problem." He says, "They take everybody." I'm serious. If I would not have heard that I would not have believed. And my mind kept going in circles. What am I missing? Something is not... unfortunately, you know, everything, I'm a believer that everything is consumer-driven. If people would want different types of yeshivas, there would be. You find the biggest tragedy in this whole mix is not the kid who didn't get accepted in the... We won't name the name in the Bez Yeshiva. That's not the problem. The problem is the kid who shouldn't be accepted, and the father has enough clout to push him in. So this kid is miserable. He's in yeshiva, doesn't belong. The father walks around with a big sign, "My son is in Bez Yeshiva," and everybody, he gets much less than he should have gotten. Instead of being in a place that focuses... It's obviously a positive thing. There's a reason why you make classes. If the kids have the same abilities, then you have more or less the same. The same. You're able to learn. If you have to deal with 10 kids with different kishonos, we have a smaller place, and we have that problem. We don't have enough kids to make two tracks a lot of times, and it's very difficult. It is difficult. The teretz is, and people don't understand how counterproductive it is. Because at the end of the day, I hate to say it, it's the father's covet that he wants him the Ivy League yeshiva, and unfortunately you have to go to a different yeshiva. I once have a mice I once had out in our school, now a high school, the boys, everybody goes to Israel after high school. In the first years, I used to commute. So the week that they went to Eretz Yisrael in the winter to look for yeshivas, I went with them. It was a very chashva kvutza of Bachim. It was the class of 97, it was probably the best class ever. Rizika class, gewaltig bal kishoynis, masmidim, really, really very good Bachim. I told him, I took him for a day around to Gedolim, to different things, and I went to Rebbe Yashiv. So the Gabi introduced him. He said, this is Bachim, came from America. They're looking for yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael for next year. They want a bracha from the Rav. They should get into the best yeshivas. So Rabbi Yashiv nodded, and he said, David shall helfen. Jeder einer soll reingehen nach passende yeshiva. Each one should get into the most appropriate yeshiva. That's the diuk. That you could learn with a Rashi, that diuk. The change from best to appropriate. If a kid needs a slower track, if a kid needs more downtime, there are Baruch Hashem wonderful yeshivas today that because the person who's the head of the yeshiva has the mindset that I'm here to teach the Bachrim, not to have some abstract image, and he gives the Bachrim what they need. That's tremendous. So Bachrim comes out, he knows how to learn, he's confident with himself. He won't walk around he's not the next yeshiva, but he's not the next failure. He's the next healthy, turned on Bala Bas, because he enjoyed his years in yeshiva, he got what he needed. I had a Rebbe who to me is a muster of what a real Rebbe is. And his name was Reb Zedel Epstein. I was able to be close to Reb Zelig in later years when I came back to America. I didn't know him in my early years. Reb Zelig was my Rebbe for 11th, Reb Zedel was my Rebbe for 11th grade and 12th grade and in camp. He was a demus of a person who was ish emes, a real tzaddik, and a real chacham. Rare combination. An awesome person, a reiner person. I was taken with him when I had him, and as the years went by, he was more and more. He was Reb Shimon's a Talmud, and the Mashgiach of the Rav Hakabi's a Talmud. I had him in 11th, 12th grade. He said over in those 2 years, two Reb Shimon's, one in 11th grade and one in 12th grade. I even remember what they are actually. And we used to ask him that there was some very good Bachim in Yeshir, Reb Shimon's, and we'd say, Kinderlach, he said, I'm a Malamit. Next year you'll have Reb Shmuel Dov Vashavchik, Erza Volz Lamden, you're going to hear a lot of good Lamdis. I'm a Malamit. He would teach Gemara Rashi, he would drill us Gemara Rashi Toisvis, and a Mashon and Maram, and that was it. Years later, after he was Nifta, they're writing his biography, and they called me as one of the people at him as a Rebbe, and this person was in Eretz Yisrael, and I told him he never said a Reb Shimon. He says, what do you mean? He always said over Reb Shimon, always. I said, never said. And then I chapped. We were 11th, 12th graders. He wasn't saying shaklolis. He was teaching us. He took the temperature of the room, and he said, they need drilling on Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos. That's what they need. He went on, he was in Torah Or in his last 25 years, in Mashkech there. He had Chabur of Ver Chashingalites. He said, Reb Shimon's. The idea that you sit down and say, and I think this goes back to the learning issue. I wanted to add something to it. The problem is, we keep hearing the same phrase, I learned 4 or 5 years in Kollel. It sounds like a jail sentence. Jail sentences are measured in years. Nobody says, unless somebody says, I was in business, and I made kach v'kach $1 million. If I was 25 years in business, means I was in jail 25 years and I made kadochas. That's what it means. Do you know measure? What do you mean 5 years in kollel? If a person would have the hashkafa, so depending on the type of limud, I learned through this mesechta, this mesechta, this mesechta, I have down these mesechtas. I have done these in yonim. I have down if a person would have a sense of what he accomplished, he would say to himself, Baruch Hashem, I was able to finish Rov and Yonim, important Yonim Shazikin, and I've written down summations of the sugyas. When I went to the Mir, I was not 17 yet, and Reb Zedel was the one who focused me on that the Mir is the right place. And he told me that two instructions, the Harag Valyava. One is I should talk to Reb Nachum every day in learning. Because he told me that, I had the courage to go once a week to him. And the second thing, he says, once a week you should have a kvias, you should write down all your chidushim came up with during the week. And if you realize, or when you realize that they're not right, don't cross them out. Add why you think it's not right. I assure you, I don't know if those chidushim were even taught in Geniza. But I had thick notebooks that when I asked myself, what did I do the last 4 years? These were the notebooks. They were better, they were worse, they were kinder, it doesn't make a difference. I think it's part, as mechanchim, it's part of a thing that we should do and should encourage. What did you learn? I didn't learn as man. I didn't learn years. I taught a duchin yonim. And if we'd have more of that, you know, then I think, then you would have courage to go on. So, okay, it used to take me a week to do an inyan, now it takes me a month. I used to be able to do a perik in a half year, now it takes me a full year. But we'd have a different knei mida to measure. That's something I wanted to add on the...
I'm sure everyone in this room agrees with that something that I didn't ask the most important question. So we have around a few, one or two more questions. Anyone want to pose to the Rosh Yeshiva?
Libay Chafetz.
Yeah, or is there something, there's certain guidelines more for this, more for that, or no? As long as...
The Iker is, he should learn, in my opinion, he should learn whatever will give him the incentive to learn more. In other words, if he'll be doing things that don't excite him, and it's against his trait, he might end up burning out. But if he does things that he thrives on, so if a person thrives on iyun, then of course he should concentrate on that. If a person thrives on being mesader and you're getting in yonim and processing facts and getting them in and chazering and knowing and chazering and knowing, he should do that. If he juggles both, but the ikar is la'olam yomidod mashali by chafetz, because practically speaking, what you do with chafetz has a kiyum. The Goyen says in Mishle, Avio Amusuli Becha, everything that a person does with chafetz and cheshek has a kiyum. So whatever brings you to cheshek and chafetz. The issue with Gemara is despite that this person is gravitating to other limudim, all I mentioned was that neglecting Gemara is neglecting limud haGemara, which sounds like he's totally neglecting limud haGemara, might be controversial. But otherwise, it's Libay Chafetz plays a very big role, I think.
So, in that case, Chesed or God or Tatum of Goy, I'm making me, I'm saying, but Tatum of Goy, then Chesed.
What do you like better?
I say, depend on Tatum.
So you do it according to the again, we're saying a very simple formula, Masha Libo Chafetz. So if you're in the mode of Chelek, do Chelek. And if you're in the mode of Takva Kayan, do Takva Kayan. If you could do both, then Adar 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 Adar.
So, I read the Rosh Hashanah's Seder, and I was blown away by it. Although there's a concept like that too.
And I'm not sure so that we study that in our person. And how can we do that? I mean, is there something positive in the world?
So I would think, I'd rather, maybe I'll just over, there's a Yid who lives in Far Rockaway, not far from here, and he has a yeshiva, his name is Rabbi Per. And he wrote a hesped on Rabbi Aaron Kotler and his Rebbe, and he said over my head, it stuck in my head, it's a long time ago, that his dream was to join the Kochim Chabur of the Ultra Bachrim. When he got to that point, Reb Aaron told him he needs him to go fundraising for the yeshiva in St. Louis. He's the only person shaykh to it. He told him, but I had in mind to learn the Kachem Zvach Chabur, and he said, nein, you have to do that. And he went. I met him this morning. I remind him of the story, and he says, it's because he did the fundraising that he is zeichet to put up a yeshiva and so on and so forth. I think having a Rebbe, and that's why it's so crucial, having a Rebbe that tells you, you know, this is your role now. It was Moshe Rabbeinu that told them, you know, Rav Lechem Sheves and so on. If it's coming because the mother-in-law says, you're pitting the mother-in-law against the Rebbe. But if you have a real Rebbe who knows who, when and where and each person, then the person is doing it with a certain sense of a Dvar Hashem. I think that's the piece that keeps on being missing. And, you know, a Yid like Reb Zeidel, when I was learning the Mir for many years, and then when I decided to go to Washington, it wasn't an easy decision. I didn't ask him before. He was a little older, but I was for 6 years commuting back and forth because I couldn't bring myself to bring the family there. I was sitting in a bus stop in Matistov, and Reb Zeidel walked by. He was at a Yid Mestama in his 90s, mid-90s. What's doing, Aaron? It's that. As I told him, I'm commuting Washington, he says, "Um wo steht es, am kennet wohnen dort?" You know, where does it say you can't live there? He's, you know, he was one of the voices, and Meister Abzelig was the one who actually told us, this is the right thing to do. And I went with a very different heart that Reb Zelig told me, take the family and go, it's the right thing to do. So I think the same thing, it's a major decision, and if the person was madrich him, in the Steigkeit of learning, tells him now is the time for you to move to the next phase, I think it's very helpful. And that's a piece that we don't put enough emphasis today on a Rebbe-Talmud relationship. You know, everyone looks for a big name, but the bigger the name, the bigger the yeshiva, not always do you have that type of relationship. And that, to me, is the most vital piece of the puzzle.
Just would like to add on what you said. I don't know if leaving the Dalet Ama Shel Halacha directly for the sake of being able to navigate life within the Dalet Ama Shel Halacha and do Derech Eretz in Torah in Derech Eretz as a goal in itself. However, we should always be living with the awareness that wherever HaKadosh Baruch Hu places us, that's not a B'dievet, that's our calling. So if a person is compelled by the circumstances of life to go out and be a professional or to be a businessman or to do whatever he has to do, he's not responding to circumstances that are unfortunate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed him there, and therefore he should look to it as a life calling. Yeah, of course. But one of the bigger encouragements is to understand, if Hashem places you somewhere, that's your life's calling. So if Hashem places you, and he placed you, now you became an accountant, you became a whatever, and now that's your life's calling, is to be the maximum Ben Torah within that. It's the three questions that they ask a person. Kavata itim la Torah, nosata v'nosata v'emuna. These are all questions about working people. And they didn't ask him, did you finish the Masechta, how many Chaburas you said. The questions that you ask a person are basically about what we call laymen. Nasata v'nasata be'emuna, did you conduct yourself scrupulously? And kavata itim la Torah, was your limud haTorah bit kvius? But this is all for a lay person. These are the questions.
Once again, we wanted to thank the Rosh Yeshiva from the depths of our heart. We know how valuable your time is, and it's not
just very nice. Okay, yes, okay, full encouragement. I mean, I the response is so emotional from people. I'm appreciate like I touched on a.
But this kind of much opinion stuff has just been a torch under so many people's heads. People are going crazy. This women is about 15, 20 times, and they know about that. They don't know me. Just they know about that. It's working. I was just by a big CEO, the Harimah, but now the Harimah is graduating to see the reception of our bosses. The guys are going nuts. They're finishing the session. They know about that. But he's making the
yeah. Another way to send it, by the way.